Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckless AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Brett Beer is hurt now. Oh. Down goes Duffy on call. Brett Beer does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt-sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia, to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
Give me the live. No more live to take, Ken Flo. Give me the live on a Monday. Happy tax day. Monday, April 15, 2024, episode 482 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. UFC 300 is in the can. We are live. We're going to start going live twice a week, ladies and gentlemen, not just to commemorate events like UFC 300. I got an extra pep in my step today, Ken Flo. It's good to see you, buddy. It was great to see you in Vegas. Anik and Florian Podcast on location. How are we feeling?
Likewise, man. The live shows just feel different. Energetically, it's different. And I imagine for UFC 300, man, it must have been amazing. What a card. Rarely, you know, you see this huge buildup for all these fights, you know, top to bottom. It was the biggest card, I think, in UFC history. And sometimes they don't always deliver. This one definitely did that.
It certainly had everything, and it was laid out beautifully by the promotion. And it's always fun for us to look to our right while we're broadcasting these events and to our left to see the UFC executives and the UFC matchmakers and their responsiveness to a given fight that they have put together. Even a fight like Bobby Green and Jim Miller. Promotionally, they were adamant four times to put that fight together. And man, Bobby Green was leaking blood of Jim Miller all over that octagon. And it just sort of snowballed from there. A tremendous show. We're going to recap the ever-living fucking daylights out of it with you today. We're also going to talk to Ray Longo. We'll ask him how it felt to have the only winning fighter booed at UFC 300. No, I'm just kidding, but I'm going to give it hard to Ray Longo, as I usually do. He'll join us at the bottom of the hour, and we are hoping to be with you for a couple hours today live on the Anik and Florian Podcast channel, DraftKings YouTube channel as well, and we will get into all things UFC 300. Headlines brought to you by Cuervo. Now's a good time to enjoy the tequila that invented tequila. It's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? Well, saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. So right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. All you need to do, deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action. New customers, 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when you opt in with code FLOW, F-L-O, only on the DK Horse app today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18+, 21+ in certain states, to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply, void where prohibited. See terms at dkhorse.com, one per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com. So kind of feels like I need to begin the Ray Longo minute with Max Holloway and not Aljamain Sterling, and kind of feels like I should begin the show with Max Blessed Holloway and not the UFC light heavyweight champion Alex Pereira, Ken Flo. I mean, you're sort of the A side of this podcast. Three times you fought for the UFC title. Tough for us Team Florian folks that you never brought that home, actually. But just kidding. I mean, where do we even begin? I guess I would just start with being so, you know, attitude of fucking gratitude just for this live event and this fan base and this fight week and what this sport has built into to be able to have a showcase like this. And, you know, you're going to be hard pressed to find an MMA card on paper with this type of depth. I would say probably until like 2032, UFC 400, maybe not. I mean, the Conor McGregor pay-per-views are enormous. Noche UFC is going to be huge, but it's just hard to have a collection of talent come together like this and stay together like this. And then to execute a show like that, we're very happy it's in the can, you know?
Absolutely. It just felt, it felt big to me just watching at home on television. And it really starts to become this celebration by the UFC itself on this amazing milestone of 300 pay-per-view events. You know, again, I was around for UFC 100. That felt like a big deal. It was a celebration of putting on 100 pay-per-view events. And now we're at 300. Yeah, and just being out there in Fight Week again, every time I'm there, it's a huge reminder of how big this sport has become, John. You've been able to see it. You're on the ground all the time. But I'm curious, where do you kind of rank this as far as the energy, specialness of all the events that you've called? Where would you kind of put this? Did it feel big? It felt big just watching.
Oh, it felt enormous. As I said, we're glad this one's in the goddamn can, Ken Flo. Yeah. It's hard sort of to put these things in proper context, especially a few days removed from it. You know, it didn't have that International Fight Week Hall of Fame backdrop. I think immediately you start to think about Conor McGregor pay-per-views, and the biggest show I had called prior to this one was UFC 229 in 2018, Conor McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, and the biggest fight in UFC history singularly, and I think that probably still holds, right? Then ends, and there's a brawl that plays out, right? So I don't know that anything, and then I got in trouble with the law later that night, actually. So I don't know that anything will top UFC 229, but UFC 300 is certainly right there. It just felt enormous, and we just undertook, I think, a lot to try to over and not under deliver. And these broadcasts can take on a life of their own, but yes, in terms of the athletes and Davis and Figueredo walking out at 3:12 p.m. Pacific, it was everything and then some. And even if you think about singular moments during the night, you know, Yan Xiaonan being choked nearly or slash half unconscious at the end of round one and everything that that fight had. And we won't get to that for probably 45 minutes. So let us get into it if we could. And since, you know, when Kenny was at ESPN, sometimes we did call him K-Swiss because he didn't like making fight picks, right? K-Switzerland. So you didn't necessarily lead a horse to water. So I'm going to lead the program with Max Blessed Holloway, if I could. And if you had told Dana White and the UFC brass that the BMF title fight would have ended this way, you just couldn't have possibly jotted up any better. And even anyone who was lukewarm to the origination of the BMF title fight, Kenny, this sport needs to crown it's bad motherfuckers, and in this case, the baddest motherfucker is Max Blessed Holloway, and certainly he's worthy of that distinction. And as Joe Rogan said on the broadcast, you know, this win essentially takes him from arguably the greatest featherweight of all time to one of the all-time greats, and I'm glad that, not that he needed it, but I'm glad that he's now in that conversation. What a huge moment in a career full of them for Max Blessed Holloway.
Isn't it so interesting how one performance can change the trajectory of your career in a lot of ways and can change the narrative extremely quickly. Now, were these guys both bad mother effers to begin with? Absolutely. This was deserving.
Wait, why won't you say it? Are you a role model?
No, like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It's just, bad motherfuckers. I have no
problem. There he is, everybody. All right, all right. Oh, there
these
he
guys
is.
Are as bad as it gets, right? This fight was the one I was most excited about. And let's take away the ending. If it didn't have that insane ending, everyone still should be kind of bowing down to Max Holloway. And it was a great reminder for me because I was not wrong, dead wrong about this fight. I thought Gaethje had this one in the bag. And certainly it's not a great way to start a fight by getting your nose broken at the end of round one. Now, that's never a good thing. Badly. However, this was a masterful performance from Max Holloway. And similar to Aljo, which we will get to, I think this weight class allows him to utilize the tools that he is so good at. He has the energy, he has the strength at 155 pounds to execute it when he needed to. Now, it was a decimation. He picked Gaethje apart, aside from maybe round four, which he probably lost. Holloway was on fire. He was utilizing all the right tools. The only knock maybe on this one was he probably took too many leg kicks. All right. Okay, whatever. Going against Gaethje. But as far as what he was doing with his hands, with his movement, defensively, this was the best Max Holloway I'd ever seen. Now, he decided to throw that all away with 10 seconds. I wouldn't have done it. Right? Maybe it's because I'm a wimp or I just wanted to hold on and get that win in my pocket. Establish myself as that bad motherfucker. I beat that guy. Okay. Holloway goes, no, I'm beating him the whole time and I'm willing to throw it away and just go, all right, now this is for the bad motherfucker belt. Right now, we're going to see I established myself as the better fighter. Now let's see who the baddest motherfucker is. And he decided to go there, throw the dice, and then knock out Gaethje, a guy who was known for his knockout power in that range. He was better than him. I did not expect that. Now, there's some luck involved there. Could have gone the other way, maybe. So there was risk involved. But for Max Holloway to be able to be willing to do that and knock Gaethje out face first into the canvas with 1 second left in round five, you couldn't write a script better than that. You would watch a movie and go, no, that would never happen. Not
right,
like that.
Right.
No, it did.
Yeah. So Max Holloway, maybe the greatest volume boxer in UFC history. He's known for a lot of things. Greatness, never knockout power per se. He had the recent knockout against Chan Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie. And, you know, say what you want about that. A tremendous highlight, but not this. And maybe at that point of the fight, Max Holloway doesn't think that Justin Gaethje is capable of finishing him. But no, right? Like, he's done this before. He pointed to the center of the octagon against Ricardo Lamas at UFC 199. This is just the cloth from which he is cut. And just couldn't happen to a better dude, man. I can't even believe it. I worried about being able to properly articulate myself on this show today. Not because we're live, but because I'm a fan of this sport. And it's just like, dude, like Dana says, we sell holy shit moments. And it's like, dude, I had to be sharp when this happened on Saturday night. Today, I don't have to be. Like, dude, holy shit. Like, are you serious? The BMF title fight's going to end with Justin Gaethje face first on the canvas with 1 second to go after an epic 24 minutes and 59 seconds. I mean, come on, man. It's like, how many people didn't watch mixed martial arts before UFC 300 and are forever hooked? Like, come to a live event. I dare you. It'll ruin your marriage.
That's why you give those bonuses out to guys like Max Holloway. Again, that's just what we know. But imagine what he made or what he's worth to be willing to do that stuff. And this is from a business perspective, not from a strategical, tactical standpoint, but just from being an entertainer and going, I got a Max Holloway that fights for me. And I know if I put him out there when the lights are brightest, he will shine bright as well. And I think he may shine brightest at 155 pounds. Now, maybe that's the case, but I would say this. I saw an evolution in his game on a technical level. He just seemed sharper. He wasn't eating the same shots that sometimes he, you know, when he goes out there and decides to trade in the pocket, sometimes you'll see Max Holloway eat a lot of shots, take a lot of damage. This was not the guy that fought Dustin Poirier. And say what you will, to me, yes, he was probably stronger and in better shape, all that stuff. But this is a different – the coaches over there with Max Holloway deserve so much credit because they're not the names that people are throwing around. Even me, I couldn't come up with their their names right now as coaches, but whatever it is they deserve. It's Gracie Techniques, I think.
Michael Nakagawa. There's a lot of unheralded guys. Darren Yap on the strength and conditioning side. And he's a loyalist too.
He looked different. And again, the class that he showed, the respect that he showed to Gaethje, and then obviously the ending of that fight, everything. It proved me wrong because I said, you know what? I don't know if he is I thought he was kind of losing a step. Now, is it because maybe he wasn't ready to make that evolution in his game? Or is it the weight class at 145 pounds that is preventing him to look as good as he hopes, right? Is he cutting too much weight? I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it's a little bit of both, of dialing in that weight cut, and now he's a different fighter technically and tactically. But this was the best Max Holloway I've seen in a very long time, and it was a great reminder to me, hey, man, give these guys a chance. Even as many fights as he's had, they still can evolve, and that's because Max Holloway is not only a fighter, but he's a martial artist as well.
There was a time, and not all fighters are both fighters and mixed martial artists. That's for damn sure. Right. There was a time, 2017, 2018, when we were still with Fox, Max Holloway did an interview with you, I believe, and Michael Bisping, and was having a real hard time, and the weight cut was part of it, and a lot of people were burying him at that point in time. So I certainly think he has now found his correct weight class. And when you harken back to the wins over Jose Aldo in Brazil and all of the epic triumphs for Max Holloway prior, this is the biggest win of his career, singularly. He beat a prime Justin Gaethje as well, who had just disposed of Rafael Fiziev and Dustin Poirier. Justin Gaethje, if he had broken his foot during this training camp, it stands to reason his next fight would have been against Islam Makhachev for the undisputed UFC lightweight championship. Justin Gaethje deserves boatloads of credit, not just for his role in this ultimate highlight at the end of the fight, but for accepting this fight, for defending a belt that had never been defended before. Yeah, you can say he cleared $5 million probably net on the night or something like that, right, as a pay-per-view point-earning defending champion, right? But Justin Gaethje deserves a lot of credit, and Max Holloway beat, I think, as close to the best version of him. You're right, the nose break factor prominently in all of this, but just a huge stock-raising win for Max Holloway, and yet in one part, I sort of wonder aloud why he needed a win like this. Certainly not the highlight, right, with the 1 second, but why did, for me, he need this win to be in that conversation as the greatest, you know, of all time, one of the greatest fighters of all time, Kenny?
And he set himself up now to be a contender or title challenger in two weight classes.
Oh, yeah.
With one fight, with one performance. And again, it's another reminder. You can change the trajectory of your career with one strike, with one performance. Let's go back to Masvidal, who was fighting for years. He does a flying knee over Askren, and now he's the biggest thing in mixed martial arts, right? So, again, it's so interesting how you can change a narrative very, very quickly. And, you know, Max Holloway has always been that dude, but, you know, questions start to arise. Can he still do that? He's been fighting a long time. He's had a lot of wars. Max Holloway is still at the top of his game, man. That was just unbelievable.
I also think at this point, even though I do think he is his best version at 55, I think he's got a great chance to beat Ilia Topuria at 45, and I think that's going to be the next fight for Max Holloway for the undisputed UFC featherweight championship. Ideally, title defense number one for Topuria in Spain, potentially. I don't know. Maybe it would be Noche UFC. Who knows exactly when and where that fight will be. But, Kenny, this obviously positions Max Holloway for three belts. He could defend his BMF belt. Chael Sonnen wants to see him do that. I don't think that's the next move at all. But he could also be a number one contender for two titles. I think he's going to fight Ilia Topuria. You do have a little bit of a different situation at lightweight. You already have a title defense announced for Islam Makhachev against Dustin Poirier, UFC 302 on June 1st. And then you also have Arman Tsarukyan lurking, who presumably is going to wait now and idle and maybe be next for the winner of that fight. But if Poirier beats Makhachev, then that throws a wrench into a lot of different plans. Talk to me about what is next for Max Bless Holloway, whose world it is right now.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking on this, I guess, on the same level of Chael in some ways, in that you have this BMF belt now, right? And there's some questions as to what weight class he should be at. He wants a fight against Topuria. Well, again, I know we talked about, you know, title winners defending their belt first before moving on to anything else. Would a happy medium be the BMF belt against Topuria at 150 pounds? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they fight in the middle. And then if he was to win that fight, Topuria retains, still retains his featherweight belt, and then he goes and does it at 145 pounds. I don't know. It's something that he's going to have to have a conversation about, because you could also argue, hey, man, he can go in there and challenge for the belt against Islam Makhachev at some point. There's a lot of options for him, and this is all because of Max. But if I'm being honest, the fight against Topuria, whether it's some kind of catch weight, which I'm sure the UFC won't be crazy about, but there is this BMF belt that he has now, so you could justify it that way. But I think the fight against Topuria at 145 pounds, we need someone who can challenge Topuria. And Holloway, for me, is the guy that stands out. And for Volk, he needs to take time away anyway, in my opinion. So we'll see what happens.
Right. Well, full stop for me with respect on Topuria right now fighting for the BMF belt. And not to say that Ilya Topuria is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, like a guy who could never fight for that BMF belt, right? And I say that with all due respect, right? You can't be like Mr. Congeniality, some super nice guy, right? Alex Morono is not going to fight for the BMF belt, you know? He's just too nice, right? But I just don't know. Like Ilya Topuria, I just don't think he's deep enough into his career, right? For a BMF type of showcase, right? I think you could go Conor McGregor, Max Holloway for a BMF belt. And I think Max Holloway can make 45. I'm not going to say with relative ease, Kenny, at this point in time, but he's looked progressively better, remarkably, making that weight as he has gotten older. The last few times he really has looked good. He's won two straight fights at featherweight. So I think you got to go undisputed featherweight championship, Max Holloway versus Ilya Topuria. And if Max wins that fight, depending on how the calendar works and health is wealth, I'd like to see Max Holloway at some point position himself for a shot at the lightweight championship, because he just beat the guy and the version of the guy in Justin Gaethje who had laid out the resume to fight Islam.
And I think Topuria's face kind of said it all as well. At the end of that, he was like, he was as surprised as everybody else. His jaw dropped and he may have sold it without even meaning to. So anytime you have more than one or two options, that's a good thing. And that's all because of Mr. Max Holloway.
You are an interesting case when it comes to somebody who could fight for the BMF belt, because as we've documented on this Anakin Florian podcast, you know, Kenny's a martial artist and a much better human being than me, you know, heaven and hell. He's definitely got the clearer path to heaven than me. But, you know, he's not like Khalil Roundtree Jr. when it comes to octagon restraint either. You know, this is a guy in Kenny Florian who gave Joe Lozon a couple of extra shots. And, you know, so I kind of lost my train of thought, but like for you, no, it's baddest motherfucker, right? For you on this podcast, you're like the nicer guy, right? Like I will evil twin me, whatever. Like, but stylistically, I think you're a BMF type of guy, but I think maybe you even were too nice outside the octagon to have fought for that BMF belt. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe. I think so. Well, also, you know, I didn't have kind of that style of just fighting anyone, anywhere, at any time, you know. Just I did fight in different weight classes, but I was definitely more calculated with when I took the fights. You know, I never said no to a fight, but I just needed the right amount of time. Like, you know, so I don't know if I would qualify for that.
So real quickly, in about 60 seconds, how would you handicap a fight between Max Holloway and Ilya Topuria at 145 pounds?
Okay. I'm still not sure Max is going to be the same guy at 145 pounds. So I would have Topuria as a favorite, probably maybe in the minus 150 range, and maybe Holloway in the plus 125 range. So close-ish, especially after that last performance. But I would think Topuria would still be the slight favorite heading into that one.
In terms of the leg kicks that Max Holloway absorbed in this fight against Justin Gaethje, a lot of fighters say this is a toughness equation. Now, we all have different pain thresholds or whatever, right? But like when Cody Garbrandt fought Dominic Cruz, it was this virtuoso performance. Cody could barely walk. As Dana White acknowledged at the press conference, Max Holloway is wearing super tight jeans, and I see him at the post show, and he's not even limping, right? So what a tough customer.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And again, you believe him in the right spot?
Well, like Bilal Muhammad repeatedly says, it's a toughness equation, right? But like Conor McGregor, when he absorbed those leg kicks against Dustin Poirier, like, dude, like physiologic, like look, the visual. I mean, I don't know that any human being would have been able to walk on that type of injury. So I wouldn't sit here and suggest that, like, I think Conor's tough enough to take leg kicks, but he was in a wheelchair, you know? So like, do you think it's a toughness quotient type thing or what?
I think it's a toughness quotient, you know, definitely in that realm as far as having that toughness, but also having the ability to keep your composure so you're not losing any added energy to the equation, right? So I think when you grow up in Hawaii and you grow up in the way that Max Holloway did, he's dealt with a ton of adversity, man. And he's had a lot of street fights along the way. That's just kind of the nature of,
yeah,
you know, living there. And I think nothing kind of fazes him at this state, at this stage. You know, he's seen the worst of it, and this was no different. And he had a ton of time in that octagon where, I don't know, he just brought that composure, that calmness, and of course that toughness. You know, the dude's something special, man.
Yeah. Congratulations to Max Blessed Holloway on a life-changing night and performance. And anyone who watches this show regularly knows that his performance against Calvin Kattar from January of 2021 on Fight Island on ABC is immortalized behind me. That is the singular greatest performance that I have seen with my own eyes. But that was against Calvin Kattar. That was not against a prime Justin Gaethje with championship stakes. And obviously it wasn't punctuated with a highlight like this with 1 second to go. So I said to Max Holloway after this fight, I can't believe you topped the Calvin Kattar performance. Because when I hearken back to the best offensive performances I've seen, Kenny Colby Covington against Robbie Lawler, all the records are Holloway versus Kattar, and yet somehow he topped it. So congrats to Max Holloway. We'll get Ray Longo's thoughts on that. But what an absolute warrior. And Hawaii couldn't have a better guy to root for and get behind. And the same can be said for Danbury, Connecticut's own Alex Pineda, Ken Flo. Sao Paulo, Brazil as well. The UFC light heavyweight champion has done things in 2.5 years that most fighters can only dream of. And he does this on the heels of a Hall of Fame career as a kickboxer. He just got inducted, right? Defended, I think, his middleweight championship in Glory Kickboxing 5 times. And now he defends the UFC light heavyweight championship successfully. My goodness, Kenny, I truly don't know what else to say about this guy other than he has maximized his utility. He has realized financial freedom, seemingly hardest worker in the room, and it couldn't happen to a better guy.
You could put him in a tuxedo and have one of those, you know, long cigarettes, and you could put him in some classy place, and you look at Alex Pereira's face, and you know that he enjoys hurting people. He just has that look. And, you know, you go back to the press conference where Dana White is announcing that, yes, in fact, he will give everybody $300,000 bonuses. And every single person on that stage was cheering, was excited, was animated. And then there was Alex Pereira with just a stone cold face look, no reaction whatsoever, probably still thinking about punching Jamal Hill in the face. And he's just different. Everything about him, you know, the way that he thinks, the way that he approaches the game, the way that he fights, the power that he brings, the speed that he brings, the dude is unusual. I mean, let's talk about the ending of that fight.
Please.
Gets kicked in the cup. Referee goes in to stop the action. No. I got this. Just waves him off, walks forward, murders another dude with a left hand. He drops. He finishes him, puts him to sleep, and then goes like this with his hands like he's presenting a Thanksgiving dinner. Like, here it is. It's on the table. Look what I did. Here's my creation. This is what I do best in the world.
Yeah.
The dude is unusual, just crazy, crazy power and structure. The man is special, just like Holloway. And again, this was the cherry on top, right? I mean, unbelievable. Jamal Hill's a very dangerous dude.
Yeah.
But the aura that Pereira brings, he just took over the fight.
And you know what else is crazy? Not for nothing else, since we're on the fucking DraftKings Network. That Alex Pineda -125 money line, right? Dude. When you looked at all the factors, the active competition schedule, the lack of a major injury, all the big time title fights that Alex Pineda competed in, and then just the different nature of his life and career as a striker. Like, I think Jamal Hill, if his life has played out differently, you know, could have been a really high level shooting guard, not to sit here and suggest NBA, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there are a lot of factors in Alex Pineda's favor. And when you look at that gesture at the end of the fight, his inner monologue is like, is that all you got, man? You know, like as if to say there are levels to this game. This one thing that you want to try to do, if you're Steve Ursig on May 4th against Alexandre Pantoja, lay some sort of foundation for a rematch with Pantoja, even if you don't win the fight. And I'm not at all being suggestive of Steve Ursig not being able to win that fight, right? But go to war with the guy, establish yourself as an undeniable bona fide flyweight elite. And I believe Jamal Hill's a light heavyweight elite, right? But Alex Pereira would be minus 600 for the rematch at this point in time, right? So it's going to be a rebuild for Jamal Hill, and we didn't hit on what's next for Justin Gaethje, time permitting, we will. But dude, Alex Pereira is the real deal, and his game has been called simple, which is fine. But, you know, best of luck to the rest of the light heavyweight division. We all love Magomed Ankalaev and his game and his wrestling and his versatility. You know, all the best against that Poatan cat.
No question about it, dude. But like, for anyone who's operating at a high level, right? Like yourself for broadcasting and anyone, no matter what you're doing, it's always about the fundamentals and hard work that you put into it. It's all the things that people don't see. You're doing all the things that a lot of other people don't want to do. Throwing a left hook a million times, and analyzing your structure, analyzing your training, going back and doing the basics until you're sick of the basics and then doing it again. Like all those years of kickboxing and Muay Thai and boxing and all, like this dude is unbelievable. And he knows he has that weapon now. And he's patient with it. Like just the way he was walking in that cage, you knew something violent was going to happen and it was going to be Pereira like doling it out. Like the way that he was just walking Jamal Hill down, like it just his energy. He just has that aura of an absolute juggernaut. And Hill just wasn't able to stop him. It was extremely impressive. And for Pereira to do it in that spot, he just made himself into an even bigger star.
Conor McGregor made his UFC debut April 2013. Ken Flo was there. I actually was expecting a child. Not me. I mean, I was the dad. But he became a two-division champion November 2016. Alex Pereira made his UFC debut November 2021. Becomes a two-division champion, I believe, November 2023. Now he has successfully defended the light heavyweight title. And we will get to what is next for the great Alex Pereira here in about 60 seconds. But if you like basketball, the 82-game preseason is now in the books. It's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Now, as Ken Flo and I know, the Boston Celtics right now, prohibitive favorites to win it all. That makes me nervous. But these early play-in games, unbelievable on paper. Pelicans minus one hosting the Lakers, Heat and the Sixers. This is the time of year I love to bet the NBA, and you can too. I mean, the UFC's got the week off, so why not? Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code AFPOD. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code AFPOD only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, we will go three wide now as we welcome to the star of the program, the Ray Longo Minute.
Oh, yeah. From
Vegas with a win. How we doing, buddy?
Let me tell you something. It's always better traveling back with a W than an L.
Right.
That's all I got to say. That's my.
All right. Well, we have a lot to get into. How much time do you have? What is the next obligation on your schedule today?
This is it.
You really have like 45 minutes for me?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. All right. Congratulations, my man. Sincerely, right? I'm not sure the featherweight debut could have gone a whole lot better. And there's a Calvin Kattar side to this, and certainly I think he looked a little bit listless at times, but Aljamain Sterling at 145 pounds I think is a really intriguing addition to this division. You had to be absolutely thrilled. I mean, the danger factor was almost non-existent from moment one. I've never seen Kattar neutralized like that.
Hey, listen, from my standpoint, when the danger is limited like that, I'm always happy because, you know, I worry about my guys. Obviously, I want the win. I want them to perform well. But at the end of the day, I want them to be healthy and, you know, live a great life. And, man, what a way to shut somebody down. I mean, there's the guy that's fought who? Chikadze, Arnold Allen, Ige, Max Holloway. I mean, think of the guys he's fought. All right. I mean, all strikers, but then again, you know, and he always had decent takedown defense. So, I mean, I got to give it up to Aljo, man. I thought he did great. I don't think Aljo was happy with the performance. I have no fucking idea why I went through it with
really?
Him. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. You know, look, he landed on his feet. You know, he did great on the ground. He had great control. You know, maybe coming off that last loss and moving up to 45, you know, look, he was, I think he was, you know, he was feeling the nerves a little bit, but it could have been the event. Cause I got to tell you, I was feeling the nerves. I mean, that event was by far the best event, Kenny, I was ever at in my life. Like from the press conference to the ceremonial weigh-ins to just the, you know, I called the guy up to get on the bus, like, because they were picking Aljo up at the house. So the guy goes, hey, you could go at 3:30, 4:30. I said, yeah, I'll probably go at 4:30. And then I guess the show started. I hear Anik and Rogan's voice, and I just get my shit on. I go to the – there was nobody even there. They took me over by myself. Like, I got to get there. Like, I was starting to wig out, like, and I was chilling. Like, I'll go get something to eat. No, fuck that. I had to be in that fucking arena. I've never felt like that before. I think they did a great job. Dana absolutely crushed the press conference. I mean, not like we know he couldn't do it, but he knows how to control the crowd. He knows how to give in when he has to give in. He knows when to push back. I thought the guy was absolutely fantastic. And the ambiance, Kenny, in that press conference when he announced the 300,000, Mark Coleman putting the belt on, was crazy. It was absolutely for me, like nothing. I don't think anything gets to me. Like, I'm going over to the press conference with Aljo going, what a crock of shit, 25 guys, 26 guys on the thing. Who's going to – nobody – what are we doing? Like, it was, and then I get there, and they line up all the champions that were on the card, and I'm starting to go, holy shit, man, I'm just in la-la land. This is huge. And then I started getting, like, into it, and I go, from that moment on, that whole event took on a different turn for me.
That says a lot, because Ray's been going to UFC fights since 1945. So, yeah. I mean, that's
Kenny, that's a compliment. Thank you. I think, because I think it was actually 39.
But I no, it's no, Ray.
But these are the things you can't really know unless you're there, you're present, you're feeling the energy of the crowd, right? It's
I wasn't feeling it before that. That's all I'm saying is they did such a great job that they brought out that emotion. That, you know, like, again, when you've been around for a long time, it just becomes matter-of-factly.
Yeah, right.
I was really beautifully surprised. What a great job.
Yeah, this curmudgeonly New Yorker who forgot to get his haircut before UFC 300. I see him Thursday night at the Virgin Hotel. Shout out to Big Ron. We're in the penthouse.
Big Ron,
thanks
baby.
To Ray for coming by, you know, and making the effort to come by with Chris Weidman. But, yeah, I see this guy Thursday night, you know. And, you know, his pants are wet because of the press conference. I'm like, what's going on here? You know, I mean, this guy's usually.
No, that, you know, I actually pissed on my pants, but thanks for covering it up for me.
But no, that's great. And we probably should have led with big picture UFC 300 stuff with you, but it was great to see you. And, you know, this guy shows up at our appearance with Cuervo as well. I mean, what a soldier you are, you know?
I mean, man. You know, Weidman was there. I haven't talked to him since the fight. So we got to see. I mean, I don't know. I wish I could have stayed for the Cuervo thing. I really did. We had the team dinner, but it looked like the ambiance was great there too. It was great seeing Kenny.
Yeah.
Getting his due, getting his accolades that he well deserves.
Exactly.
And I love it. And John, you're always a big star with everybody, but it was just great. Everybody's accessible to the people. That's the type of people I like to be around.
Yeah. You know? All right. Well, before we potentially circle back to Aljo, one of two winning fighters to get booed at UFC 300. No, I'm just kidding. I got to get to you a little bit.
Hey,
right?
Listen.
No, come on.
That's not unusual.
I'm just kidding. I love him. Yeah. Huh?
What? That's not a new thing for him.
No, of course not. So. I just DC wondered aloud during one of these fights. Like, I just don't understand how mixed martial arts as a sport, you know, and we're not going to talk about this today, but how does mixed martial arts get booed as a sport when wrestling and grappling is a part of it? Like, when the fight transitions to one part of the sport, you know, it's just interesting. Like, to see if NBA athletes got booed for making layups instead of three pointers or something. It's just weird.
I think my biggest advice to him, John, in between whichever round it was, don't fucking listen to this crowd, man. Do not let them become a factor in this goddamn fight. You are doing unreal, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And right. He learned his lesson in that last fight against O'Malley. I don't think he really needed to pressure. I think he was rushing himself and then, you know, got caught with that chop. But the thing for me, Ray, I think, which I probably saw incorrectly, I saw an Aljamain Sterling that had way more pep in his step. He had way more strength and was timing things really well. And I think there were some question marks on my part of going, can his strength translate to 145 pounds? And that was not a problem. I didn't see that really being a problem at all. He's that strong. And then as far as the energy that he brought, this is a much better. I think he was probably showing maybe 75% of what he actually had in 35 and obviously still doing extremely well being a champion who defended the belt. But I think we're going to see a much better Aljo now at 145. I think he at least proved that and is on that right foot. Well, now he knows what he can do up a weight class.
And Kenny Calvin's a big dude.
He's a big 45.
He's a big one. He's a big 45, man.
That was a concern. And he didn't have a problem in the strength department.
Listen, Aljo's skill set and his set of attributes, if he ever decides to really use them, and he knows how to fight within himself. But you see, like those spin back kicks that Holloway was landing on Gaethje. Yeah. You got to trust me on this. He could do that blindfolded. Like I see him do it. And then, you know, like, and I'll always tell him, you know, obviously I'm the striking guy. So, you know, I put my two cents in with that stuff, but that's easy for him. Easy. He might tell you differently. I'm telling you that from watching and he's got so many other tools that he hasn't really shown yet that, you know, it's going to come a point in time. He's going to let everything go completely. I think on that end, the grappling, he's got down to a science. He's
very technical.
Well, there
might be a matchup that necessitates that he use those things at some point in time, especially up 10 pounds, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
Certainly, we've always known he's a flashy, decorated, dynamic striker, but it's one thing to do it, you know, in one setting and another. Guys, we're not talking about Aljo. We're live right now. We're not talking about, you want to talk about Anthony Dilemme right now, or can I get back to fucking Max?
No, let's give a shout out to Anthony Dilemme. Great win for
later.
Him.
No, I said later. No, I said later. Yeah, we're not doing later. That. You do it real quick right now. I didn't get back to Max.
No, we're going back later. No, you're not going to rush Anthony Dilemme. We'll go back to him. Go, move on. Let's go.
We'll get to fucking Dilemme later.
Are you fucking kidding me with this thing? I'm jet lagged.
So, Charlie Moynihan, one of my dear friends, longtime ESPN producer. He's been producing for ESPN 25, 30 years, if not longer. I'm not trying to date the guy. But I come up to do the post-fight show with Teddy Atlas and Brett Okamoto, and Charlie says to me, and this guy has covered it all, NBA Finals, Super Bowl for years. He goes, after the Holloway thing, he says, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen, right? When you parlay all the factors, the BMF title fight, the title, the fight itself, the knockout with 1 second to go, the UFC 300 angle, right? So whether or not you believe this to be the greatest knockout in UFC history, alongside Anderson Silva, Vitor Belfort, Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo, Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman, right? Ray, a lot of people are saying, as UFC fans, combat sports fans, this is the fucking greatest thing they have ever seen. So I asked the poll question at Anik Florian Pod, like, is this the greatest thing you've ever seen? And yes, there will be some recency bias in there. But I'm just saying, you know, 70% of, you know, 5 or 10,000 people believe that what we saw Saturday night was the greatest fucking thing they've ever seen. So where does it stack up for you?
It stacks up as probably the greatest thing I've ever seen. I'll tell you why. Because the guy's ahead in the fight. He's got nothing to gain except get knocked out by a guy that has the ability to put you out with one punch. And with 10 seconds to go, he plants his flag in the middle of the octagon. Let's fucking go. And he knocks him out with 2 seconds to go. That's some Hollywood shit that you wouldn't even believe. If they put in the movie, you'd go, yeah, that'll fucking happen. Right? But Holloway, this is why the guy, look, he didn't have to do that. This guy's a fucking fighter, man. This is what the UFC wants. Who could blame him? That was absolutely phenomenal against a guy that's considered an absolute killer. Let's fucking go. He moved up in weight. Look at all the factors that make it the greatest knockout ever. He's a 45, a moving up. Gaethje's an absolute assassin who'll put his body on the line for anything. Up in the fight, nothing to gain, except he has the ability, the chance to get knocked out. And look what he does. Look what that. No risk, no reward. No guts, no glory, whatever fucking saying you want. This is the guy. Holloway is the fucking man, and he's going to remain the man. And that just guaranteed him a title shot at Topuria for 100%. I'm sure of that.
I don't know what else to say.
Like all those other knockouts came within the fight, same weight class, you know, nothing. some good coming behind, but nothing like this where it was the timing, the pacing, like anything else, like a movie, like a stand-up comedy set.
Yeah.
His pacing and the timing of everything was absolutely beautiful, and he pulled it off.
Yeah.
It would have been good if he didn't knock him out. It still would have been good, right?
Right.
It would have been, but he knocked him flat.
What may be more impressive than that knockout in the last second of that round, round five, is the fact that Holloway doesn't need a wheelbarrow to carry around his balls all day. I mean, like that was what got me out. Like, it was just, all right, I beat you as a fighter. Technically, I took you apart. Now let's see whose balls are bigger. And then he just stood there and, gave you on his face with a knock. It was just crazy.
Kenny, I don't think a wheelbarrow's big enough for those balls.
Yeah, right.
And again, one of the most personable, nicest guys you're going to meet. So
really is.
How could you just put everything together? How accessible he is, how complimentary. I mean, I saw him. I mean, it feels like I know the guy for 100 years. I really don't. I just love watching him fight. Just a great dude, man. Couldn't be happier for a guy. Yeah. And Gaethje's always a warrior. It's not taking 1 ounce of anything away from him.
Yeah.
Takes two to tango, and he's willing to put his balls on the line too. So give them both wheelbarrows.
So we've been going live for 45 minutes, and I wonder aloud how we're going to get to Diego Lopez in the next 75 minutes, because there's so many different things that we actually have to get to. And Kayla Harrison, by the way, Ken Flo and Greg Jackson. It was nice to see Greg Jackson there in Las Vegas. I'm going to start hanging out with older men like Ray Longo and Kenny Florian and Greg Jackson. So I'm not always the oldest man in the room. But what great to see the wizard, Kenny, Greg Jackson. Did you guys break bread, or do you guys want that revealed? You guys fucking, these dangerous men probably don't.
Yeah,
want that
we did. We got some dinner. Always great to see Greg. Awesome dude. Ton of experience. Obviously, it's always cool to kind of pick his brain and, yeah, man, legend of the game for sure.
How old is Craig now?
Greg's his name. You call him Craig?
Greg, I don't know how old Greg is.
Gregory. How old is Gregory?
I don't know.
Is a rival of yours? You're calling him fucking Craig?
No. I had a good chat with Winklejohn. I didn't know Winklejohn's 61. Wait, first, I'll give you.
Wow, he looks great.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you a good story because I love it. What are you doing?
I'm wearing your Ray Longo Minute t-shirt right now. JohnAnnick.com, promo code One More Sleep.
Sorry, I thought that was Deanna.
See that? I'm wearing your fucking face. Wait, I mean, first I'm Ron Pellegrino wearing your fucking face to our appearance.
I wore
all
Anik and Florian shit the whole week because I'm a team fucking player. That's right. You saw
I think you wear it because it's comfortable, if I'm being honest, right? I mean,
you're not. Well, be honest, because I wear it to represent because I love you guys.
Well, we love you too.
Listen, I'm talking. First off, shout out to Sean Shelby. I always like busting his balls, but I love the guy now because we're talking about something. He goes, "Well, we're the same age." I go, "Really?" I go, "How?" I go, "How old are you?" He goes, 52. I go, "Wait a minute. Do you think I'm 52?" And then I tell him I'm 65, going to be 66. He goes, "No fucking way." So I feel fucking great, man. I love hearing those compliments.
Well, dude.
Let's fucking go.
Big Ron is straight as an arrow, but man, he was talking about the Ray Longo aesthetic when you were 30, as if like you were his dream man in that type of scenario. I mean, we all know at a point in time when Ray Longo was shredded up with those blue eyes, it was just like, I mean, you know, women love him, men want to be him, all that stuff. Right?
I don't know about shredded up, but the blue eyes were popping.
You have aged gracefully. I mean, black don't crack and you're white, but largely for a Caucasian man, you've aged gracefully. All right. So there are so many directions in which we could go. There really are. Would you like to talk about Alex Pineda for a minute?
Let's go, man. Everything. Bro. There's a lot to talk about.
So I don't know that there's a comp for this guy. We have marveled at Israel Adesanya and Conor McGregor and how quickly they essentially laid out Hall of Fame resumes in the UFC. But for this guy to make a decision, right, to transition fully from kickboxing to MMA when he did, because he didn't like Izzy sort of talking about him, right? Former alcoholic, doing this really in a lot of respects for respect, but for financial gain to support his two boys. And he has in a few years become one of the most sensational, accomplished MMA fighters of all time, like at least on paper.
Yeah, look, first off, besides even what he's doing in the octagon, unequivocally, the best and most scariest walkout I've ever seen in the last 30 years. I mean, who cannot love that, man? And I don't know if he does it on purpose, but he plays the part. He just has that blank look. This guy looks like, you know, they can announce him from parts unknown and you would believe it. You know what I mean? Like, I just the way he carries himself, that's a scary motherfucker, man. I don't know. Yeah. That's a scary motherfucker. And he hits like a goddamn freight train. Holy shit. He generates power. I think it's got to be his the way his arms are so long and the way he could generate power from a short distance is just absolutely phenomenal.
So we asked a poll question, who would be next for Alex Pereira? Now, I said on the broadcast, Kenny, repeatedly as he was getting his Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt for this knockout, he was looking at his left pinky toe, seemed like maybe something was going on that was irritating him. And then I was told as the broadcast went on in my ear that maybe there was something with his foot. So it sounds to me like May 4th, UFC 301, that does already have a headliner and branding, would be ambitious for this guy. He's not going to fight in defense of his light heavyweight title in a few weeks and cut all the weight again. So it would be a heavyweight fight. And I don't know that you're going to rush Tom Aspinall and Alex Pereira for UFC 301. Maybe Pereira positions himself for some heavyweight work this summer against Tom Aspinall. But I asked the poll question, and I'm not sure why Aspinall and Ankalaev are linked in those percentages, Cody, so if you could get me different results. But essentially, the guys who could possibly be next for Alex Pereira: Tom Aspinall for the interim heavyweight championship. Magomed Ankalaev would seem to be the guy at light heavyweight. Yuri Prohazka had a huge result here, Ken Flo, against Alexander Rokic, but I got to think at light heavyweight, Ankalaev would have the inside lane over Prohazka, perhaps not. But Kenny, what do you think about as to what is next for the multi-optional Alex Pereira?
You know, if I'm Alex Pereira, I would prefer to stay in my weight class. You know, especially the stylistic matchup against someone like Aspinall, who can put him on his back and keep him there with the size and the weight. Pereira's a big guy, no question about it, but Aspinall is both a tall and wide guy. And weight at the end of the day really does make a difference, especially in a lot of those grappling exchanges. Striking wise, hey, he can knock out anybody all the way up to heavyweight. I truly believe that.
100%.
But I think at this stage of the game, I would like to see him against someone like an Ankalaev. Let's see a new challenger out there. While Prohazka is always going to make it a very exciting fight, I didn't see anything in his game where I'm like, yes, he's dangerous, but I don't think he can prevent Pereira from knocking him out. Like, as many times as he got hit against Rokic, I would say Pereira would need to throw 1/10 of the amount of those strikes to put Prohazka back to sleep again. So I would like to see him against Ankalaev.
Ray, 38% of people said Tom Aspinall is the guy they want to see next for Alex Pereira. 38% also said Magomed Ankalaev. So fan opinion pretty split there. 18% Yuri Prohazka, 6% other. What would you do with Alex Pereira? I mean, you got to measure your goals against his, but what do you think they'll do and what would you do?
I think, look, the way his trajectory is, before we even get that, talk about moments at UFC 300, because I'm thinking about Alex now. A guy gets kicked in the balls and he just, hey, they're only balls. Get the fuck away from me. I got something to do. Wait, you think I'm one of those pussies that gets kicked in the balls? I'm going to take 5 minutes. Get the fuck out. And he goes in and does this. I'll tell you, these are moments, dude, that this event had some shit that's going to live on forever. And I just want to give credit to that, too, because I'm blown away by that. Didn't even look. Didn't even turn his head. Wouldn't take his eyes off his opponent, because that's not what guys like that do, man. Even when he backs up out of the stare down, he ain't turning around and running back to the corner. He's making eye contact as he's walking back. This guy is so fucking dialed in. I love it.
Listen to this quote about it. I was starting to find my distance. I started using leg kicks from the beginning so I could find his distance. He's a southpaw, so it's a little harder. My game plan was to start throwing hands after that. So then he threw the groin shot, but it did not really hurt too much. So I chose to just keep pushing so I did not have to reset the distance, capitalize on the moment. Like, fight IQ, fighting a bunch of championship fights in a row against a guy who tore his Achilles. I'm not trying to like lean too much into the Achilles, right? But look at what Alex Pereira is doing, ladies and gentlemen, you know, and think really seriously before you go bet against him in his next fight. Like, he's all in right now in the middle of his fighting prime. He's getting better every fight.
Yeah. And to your point about what do you do with him? look, if he wants to go to heavyweight, I think what he's been doing is absolutely phenomenal. Why not try to complete the hat trick, man? Let him go up a weight class and do something big, or at least give him the opportunity. I 100% think he deserves it. And I think the crowd would want it. I think the fans, you know, obviously are behind him. He's building this aura that's invincible, and give him that due, man. I say go for it. Yeah, really run with it, because now's the time to do it. It's not going to be there forever.
You know, Kenny is a very covert operator, so we don't even know his inner circle necessarily. You know, the next thing you know, he and Greg Jackson are, you know, looking to make sure there's no imminent threat at the bar, and then we don't see Ken Flo again the rest of the week, you know?
Wow.
But like in terms of surrounding yourself with good people and being some sort of byproduct of the people that you perpetually surround yourself with, Plinio Cruz, Glover Teixeira, this Alex Pereira corner and circle is really tight for Nelly Feliz, everybody else. And they did a really good job with him. And he might just be getting started here in terms of what he's going to accomplish in the next 4 to 5 years. Ray, you want to go? Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, John, you could see the friendship there, right? You could see that they have a good time busting balls. They like each other. Not a big camp. They're coming out of Danbury, Connecticut. I don't think there's another gym up there.
Right.
I mean, come on, man. I mean,
you guys, you know, all tight knit, you know, 100%. Local, you know, no nonsense. Fucking
I don't know how tight knit we are anymore, but we were tight. But that's what I'm saying. I love that type of scenario where these guys are friends and, you know, just nothing's coming before that. And they're knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
They're knocking the cover off the ball. And you have to love it. Love it.
Yeah, and I also think that from a promoter's perspective, as far as Pereira, when you have a star like that, a guy who's doing so well in his division, I think you have to be careful to not push him into the heavyweight division and then maybe diminish that kind of luster potentially. You know, I think you kind of want to keep him, get the most out of him in that weight class, and then maybe do that later. Not to say he can, but you got to start, keep building that star. The dude's doing unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that from a long-term standpoint, but from running off the emotion and the momentum you have now, look, the only way it's going to be a disaster is with the grappling, right? Like you say, he could strike with anybody. So they could definitely pick a guy up there that could be tailor-made for him to get a heavyweight win. There's absolutely no question about that.
Yeah.
But from a building standpoint, you're 100% right. From a seizing the moment standpoint and cashing in on a big payday, I say strike while the iron's hot. This is the time to go. And like, again, it could backfire, but you know, he wanted to take care of his two kids. That'll be well taken care of. They'll be well taken care of. So I don't ever want to deny a guy of a payday.
Kenny, Boston Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla shows up to the morning shoot around today wearing a Zhang Weili t-shirt.
No way.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Talk to me about Zhang Weili over Yan Xiaonan. Unanimous decision 49-45 times three. And let me just say off the top, really tactical, fun fight. A lot of admiration for both corners, but particularly to Uriah Faber and Danny Castillo. They've done tremendous work. Marcus Reeves as well with Yan Xiaonan, and just loved watching them sort of coach her through a lot of the perilous moments of that fight.
Experience matters, and Yan Xiaonan, every time I've seen her compete, she's looked better. And I thought she not only technically looked better, but we found out just how willing she is to go to those dark places, man. She is an absolute beast. You were not going to beat her unless she was 100% asleep, whether it was a knockout or a choke. We found out if she's just 50% asleep or even 80% asleep, she was going to find a way to get back to that stool. And she did just that. So toughness, technique, you know, had the right tactic, just didn't have enough against Zhang Weili, who, you know, from an athleticism perspective, from a skills perspective, just had a little bit too much, particularly on the ground. I think where she was getting caught up is Yan was able to time her because Zhang Weili was throwing like little to no feints at all. So you can at least see her coming in. And yes, she's fast, But Yan Xiaonan is also very fast and was catching on the counter a few times, was the longer, taller fighter. So she was kind of able to see her enter. She was landing the right shots. So for Zhang Weili, I'd like to see her faint a little bit more. But still, her ability to get you on the floor and now look like a wrestler and look like a jiu-jitsu fighter is really impressive. The strides that she has made from her first fight to where she's at now is really, really impressive. But I thought that was a very exciting fight. You know, coming off of what the Gaethje and Holloway fight after that, you're like, oh my God, I don't know how much more I can handle. You know, this is a lot. And then these guys deliver, and then the fight after that delivered. So it was exhausting, not only because it was late at night, but just the amount of energy watching these guys go at it, the amount of skill that was being exchanged. Every fight just really delivered, and this was certainly one of them.
Right.
Yeah, I was super, super impressed. And again, it had the moments again where the girls basically choked out. Like, again, that part was a weird scenario because she was basically out. So, and I don't want to be a dipshit, but like, it was like Merab and Ricky Simone. They overturned that decision because of that. Merab survived. It right. was the same exact thing. That girl was out.
Right.
The girl was out. Why wasn't the fight over?
She was actually more out than Merab. And even though I thought Jason Herzog handled things beautifully, know if he's allowed to touch her, but nobody else can, you know. Yeah. But man, she, by the skin of her teeth, she was able to extend that fight. But you're right.
But you know what I mean? And again, I'm going to say that fight was closer than the scorecards indicated because of the knockdowns. You know what I mean? She did knock it down. She just got hammered with the grappling exchanges and she couldn't get back to her feet. But that fight, because of those knockdowns, added a lot of intrigue and, you know, just a great, great visual for anybody watching. So you had to score the fight for, you know, Weili, but that fight was really, really close and it could have turned at any second while that fight was standing up, and it almost did. So hats off to both corners. I thought they did a great job. Rudy,
outstanding job by Rudy.
Thank God he had a glove on when he stuck his finger up a nose, because that would have been kind of...
Well, it's actually right at the base of the between the two nostrils, Ken. Oh, no. Open up the passageway.
No, he was knuckle deep, John, if you really look at it. He took one for the team, Rudy. He's a good man. Very good man. I thought he just pushed right under here
as he came to the broadcast booth to tell us. But, yeah. Wow. Well, hey, as I was mentioning early, though, if you can't get the belt, you know, maybe you lay some sort of foundation for a rematch, not to say that they're going to run that one back because of all the strawweight talent, right? Like, I think at some point, you know, Andrade, I think, has won a couple in a row. You know, she graciously, when Jessica Andrade was a champion for a couple cups of coffee, flew to China to fight Zhang Weili in her first title defense off of pay-per-view on UFC Fight Pass. So Andrade, say what you want about how she stacks up to the other strawweight contenders right now, she deserves another shot against Zhang Weili, period. Don't at me. And by the way, Ray, my favorite word to hear you say in the English language by a significant margin is hammered.
Hammered.
Oh, it sounds so good. All right, so Dustin Poirier is going to fight Islam Makhachev for the undisputed UFC lightweight championship at UFC 302, I believe, on June 1st, Newark, New Jersey, if I'm not mistaken. But Arman Tsarukyan's next fight could likely be for the title. We'll lead with Kenflo on this. Where were you when you're watching Tsarukyan and Charles Oliveira? You back at the Red Rock? Where were you watching this fight, Ray?
I'll tell you where I was. I was in the back and I didn't really watch it. I had to order it when I got home and rewatch it last night. So I got to see it, but
podcast will reimburse you. Yep. Go on.
Oh, I mean, you think that's right. I got to come home and order the goddamn fight. Well,
I said podcast will reimburse you.
I just said
we'll reimburse you. Now you're going to complain about and you also said off the top of this Ray Longo minute, you talked about this event. And you've lauded Dana. You can't pay the fucking $79.99. Podcast will reimburse you. We got you.
I tell you, he's brutal today. He's brutal.
He's hammering you.
He's hammering. I'm getting hammered. I was trying to make another point with that. It's not the podcast's place. But wait, where were we again?
We were talking about where you were for that fight. It sounds like maybe I should have asked Kenny, but go ahead. I didn't mean to bite your head off. And Ray Longo, incidentally, very generous man. I'm not trying to, you know, cast aspersions here that this is a frugal or cheap gentleman not wanting to pay for it. Generous guy. You should see what he sent my kids. nothing ever. Hey, right? You could, I'm just
you,
kidding.
Listen, you could try passing that around. You're gonna come on deaf ears because I'm a generous motherfucker. But anyway, listen. So I think I was in the back, so I saw bits and pieces of it. But when I got home, I saw it. I thought, you know, I picked Sarukian to win, and I thought he did. I thought he did a great job of controlling. You know, Oliveira always has trouble with the top pressure. He's still dangerous off his back, but he can't. You know, you're just not going to win a fight like that. And man, but he had his look. Sarukian's tough, man. That choke was. I mean, you have to give it up to the guy. Survive first and then win, and that's what he fucking did. And that was not easy to do. You could see he was struggling, Kenny. And I'm saying 99% of the guys would have tapped. He's not one of them, and he deserves to win that fight. And I think that's a really I want to see that fight more than any other fight. I want to see Sarukian against Islam. That's the fight I want to see more than any other fight.
Ken Flo, Charles Oliveira, Armand Sarukian, talk to me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I think that's why Sarukian was a favorite. And Oliveira, again, proved that offensively he is a problem. He's a nightmare because of all the tools that he brings offensively. But when he is, you know, the nail and not the hammer, that's when he can struggle a little bit. Defensively, he showed that vulnerability. Didn't take a whole lot of damage, but those short elbows from Sarukian, man, he's absolutely brutal there. And again, I think a great measuring stick for that was his fight against Davi Hamos, an ADCC gold medalist, you know, as good as it gets when it comes to grappling. And he was dominant from that top position. He was not afraid to engage on the ground, something that a lot of people are afraid to do against Oliveira, and did so after almost getting submitted off the guillotine, by the way. But he really did a great job of being defensively sound when he needed to be. He was winning the rounds when he needed to. Battled back after losing round one, winning rounds two and three, and doing it on the ground against Oliveira, you know. And I think that vulnerability kind of revealed itself again here for Charles Oliveira. Still going to be exciting. I still want to see him fight, he came up short because of those same things that he's been kind of showing in previous losses, or even when he kind of comes back to win and we see him get dropped with something. But, he's still really dangerous. I think I saw some improvements in his striking as well. So Oliveira is still getting better. Just defensively needs to be a little bit sharper. But Sarukian, man, proved himself to absolutely be worthy of fighting for a belt in the near future.
100%. And I think also, Kenny, he's a guy that you got to put to sleep or you're not stopping him. Like, he's not going to quit. He's not going to tap early. He's got to go out. Lights got to be out completely, else that guy's going to be a problem.
Definitely.
Thought it was a great fight for him.
Oh, and it's really telling just to hear all the other pro fighters talk about Armand Sarukian. And Kenny, by the way, some connective tissue for you and me. You hearkened back to the fight between Armand Sarukian and Davi Hamosh. So I asked Armand in the fighter meeting any sort of comp from your past or maybe a fight that might, you know, help you with this one. And he mentioned Davi Hamosh. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a confidence builder. And the other thing is, you know, in that fight, I would have loved to have seen five rounds, you know, because it wasn't absolutely clear who was going to win that fight if we went into rounds four and five. So maybe we see that down the line at some point. But just an awesome fight. Very technical.
And John, that's pretty good. Hawking back. What'd you watch? Robin Hood before you got on the broadcast? Hawking back.
I know. Embarrassingly enough, I've dropped that verb twice today. I regret doing that. It's becoming a little bit of a verbal crutch on this episode, you know, but I'm a little bit underslept, you know?
Yeah, he. Hawking back to the
Bobby
Ramos fight.
I'm underslept. That was the most exhausting night of my professional career, which is neither here nor there.
I get that, man.
So, but Charles Oliveira, I'd just like to say really quickly, I feel like I want to get a Charles Oliveira tattoo. And I'm not sure if he's the most popular, fighter in the world right now, but he's certainly in the top three. It's crazy to think that Amanda Nunes, upon retirement, sort of said, I want some Brazilian to, you know, take the throne now and become a champion, because at the time there were no Brazilian champions, right? Mm-hmm. And Alex Pineda and Charles Oliveira, two of the biggest three stars in the company right now, essentially. And Alexandre Pantoja has also won the belt as well. Maida Bueno Silva was not able to get that done, right? But it's just amazing what Charles Oliveira has become. And even if the loudest ovations on this night were reserved for Alex Pineda, Charles Oliveira has a relationship with this fan base that is on a level that, you know, people can only dream of. Can we get to Bo Nickel, Ray? Let's I got like there. 7 more minutes with Ray Longo. What does the rest of your day hold, Ray, by the way?
I'm just my day. I canceled all my private lessons. I'm going into workout, and then I'll teach the 7 o'clock class.
Maybe in the future you don't even book those privates on a Monday following a pay-per-view when you're crossing time zones on the way back, right? Not want to inconvenience those people. You might as well just get ahead of it and not book them, right?
yeah, could. That's what I did, I think. But, yeah. But thanks for nothing. But,
well, no, it's all for you. Some of those people listen. So if you guys are listening, future, just don't be expected. The Ray's going to show up on those Mondays after a pay-per-view. Seems today he prioritized this show over.
He's killing your business, Ray. My goodness.
Yeah, could. I just
wait. I'm killing his business. Is that what you're saying, Kenny? All right. I mean, we can take this offline. I feel like we've done some things to maybe help your business, you know? Maybe the chicken pound can send me some fucking chicken before the end of time, you know?
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah, chicken pound getting a shout out.
Yep.
What else?
Two shout outs. Let's get to Bo Nickel, shall we?
Yes.
Cody, maybe you can chase the quote as to what he said Dana White said to him after the fight. But Nickel comes over after the win over Cody Brundage. He was a little bit disappointed. I know he expects perfection, and he did get hit with a right hand early in this fight. But the end comes at 3:38 of round two by rear naked choke. Bo Nickel 6-0, realizes a stool for the first time in his MMA career, right? Longest pro fight coming in was 2 minutes and 54 seconds. What'd you make of Bo Nickel methodically moving forward, kicking off the pay-per-view? Ray Longo.
So a couple of things. First off, the guy got booed at the press conference. For what reason? I have no fucking idea. Maybe they were mad he was on the main card. But I think more impressive than the fight for me was the way he handled the microphone. And very articulate, man. I got 6 goddamn fights. What do you want? Give me a chance to grow a little bit. You know what I mean? And guys like that can't get fights on the regional scene. Nobody will fight him. So he's got to do on-the-job training in the biggest show in the world, and I think he's doing an absolutely great job. Do I get the, and again, I'm biased and everybody could attack the shit out of me, but do I get the Chris Weidman vibe when Weidman was coming up? You know, he was going in there like, you know, he was taking people out, you know, the Lawlers, the, you know, Munoz was a good wrestler. I mean, he did some stuff coming up, and he had no fights. He had 5 or 6 fights. How many fights did he have when he fought for the title? So I'm not getting that vibe, because I think Weidman had a different type of presence, and he wanted everything as quick as possible. But what I love about Bo Nickel is he's taking his time, and I think it's really going to pay off for him. He's super intelligent. I love the way he spoke. Obviously, he's talented as a motherfucker. But I think he's got the right thing. He doesn't want to be pushed into anything big. Give him a chance to grow. Because, again, you can't get fights on the regional circuit. I'm there. I promote fights. Nobody's fighting a guy like Bo Nickel. And, like, I think he said, if you get the contract, just sign the goddamn contract. Because, you know, it is what it is. And let him have a couple of fights. Build him up the right way. And I think you're going to see an outstanding champion. So he might have been disappointed with the performance, but I love the way he handled the mic. I think he's got a clear vision of what he wants to do and how he wants to get there. And it sounds perfect to me. So Weidman was a little different, man.
Weidman,
when John Jones, somebody backed out of that fight, I was on the plane. But when I got off, I had 10 messages. He wanted to fight John Jones. So he was just right in the mix from the beginning. You know what I mean? And it was a little different. And for Chris, it worked out. But I think this guy's taken a more methodical approach. And I love it. I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, no, that's really valuable stuff there from the legend, the wise Ray Longo. Kenny, Bo Nickel thought he would be 10 or 11-0 when he got to the UFC, but certainly hard to find fights. Twice he competed on Dana White's Contender Series, no contest. Yeah, you know, Kenflo back in the day, 2-1, same thing. You know, who's going to fight Kenflo regionally? Kenny actually is like, these local promotions, like, say, no elbows, and Kenny's still fucking throwing elbows. So, you know, eventually just going to get to the UFC, can't find anybody to fight locally. But Kenny, what'd you make of...
Kenny was fighting at 205, and he couldn't get fights. Fucking crazy.
Unbelievable. Kenny, what'd you make of Bo Nickel?
Well, listen, I can also relate to not having a whole lot of experience and then kind of being thrown into the fire. It's like, here you go. You're in the UFC, kid. You got 4 fights. Good luck. not easy, you know, because you're inevitably going to make some mistakes. Now, if you're able to make some mistakes and still get the wins, these are great things. Bo Nickel didn't have a perfect performance, but it was still damn good. And what, the first time he ever had to go into round two, you're going to learn a lot from that process. Not every fight is going to be perfection. That's not the way real combat goes. You're going to have to some adversity. You're going to make mistakes. How you react to those mistakes, that's when we find out who you are. And, you know, still you can argue he hasn't experienced a whole lot of adversity. We haven't seen him in rounds 3, 4, 5. We haven't seen him when he's hurt. We haven't seen him when he's tired. We will still find those things out. You can't buy experience, and he's going to be learning as he goes and during these fights. But still, I thought it was a really solid performance. For me, I think he wasn't really able to manage the energy of the fight a little bit. He kind of was just engaging whenever Brundage wanted to engage. And I think it'd be probably one of those fights where it seems like it was really being played very, like almost in fast forward during the fight. I want to see Bo out there being able to kind of lead the dance, go when he wants, diffuse pressure when he wants, as opposed to kind of just being this mad scramble. So I think that's probably more of what I would criticize. But I mean, come on, I'm still kind of being very picky here. Bo Nickel is also special, and I expect him to be a champion in the future as well.
Yes.
There was a lot of pressure on Bo Nickel. We asked last week, is there more pressure on him or Kayla Harrison or Zhang Wei Li? And a lot of that pressure was just rooted in kicking off the pay-per-view. And right. Dana White came over to provide some reassurance and just said, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to be a big star. I just think some of Bo's disappointment was not only his own perfection, but kicking off the biggest show in UFC history. And all those big favorites, Kayla Harrison, Bo Nickel, Zhang Wei Li, were able to hold serve as the favorite. Ray, I'm supposed to let you go right now.
No, so, I'm good.
All right. So, I mean, do I go Dilemmi or Prohaska is the question.
First off, let's talk about Kayla Harrison, because I had the opportunity to meet her.
How about neither?
Absolutely love her. This is a great soul of a person. I think she stands for the right stuff. What a performance she had. Handles the mic beautifully. Give it a title shot. I believe she'll beat Raquel Pennington. She deserves it. I think she represents, you know, women's MMA beautifully. And like, again, I just, you know, for meeting her for the first time, just felt like an East Coast ball busting mentality. I love her.
Yeah.
And I think she deserves the shot. That's the call. Give it a title shot next. She's ready for it. She's a professional when you talk to her.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like on every level, she's exactly what you want in a fighter, in a person, in everything. So hats off to Kayla Harrison on a great UFC debut. And I think Kenny had mentioned something before where she wasn't put on there were so many fights, she kind of wasn't the main attraction, which takes a lot of pressure off you, Kenny. I think that's a really good point. Whether it would have bothered her or not, because she's got such great experience, who knows? But
yeah,
those octagon jitters with the UFC, and you're at that press conference.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's human. I mean, it could really affect you, but she seemed to be totally unaffected. She's dialed in, and she deserves that shot. I'm 100% behind her. Always be a big fan of hers moving forward. I think she's unbelievable.
Yeah, she'll be a 5-1 favorite probably to beat my friend Raquel Pennington if they do fight.
Is that your buddy?
Yeah, well, they're all my friends. I mean, I just got to know Kayla, but I like her as well. But yeah, Raquel and I are close, and I remember being with her after one of her two losses to Holly Holm, and just tremendously frustrating. And then she reeled off, you know, 5 or 6 in a row to become the world champion thereafter. So, but Laura Sanko, my great colleague and friend, said that she feels like Kayla Harrison to the UFC is exactly what women's MMA needs right now. And I would agree with that. I think Kayla just
a breath of fresh air
to the table. And if anybody can speak, Kenny, to you know what she has accomplished professionally and dealt with personally, it's you, right? Saving her family and adopting these two beautiful children and raising them on her own. Just a tremendous ambassador for MMA and the UFC. And she's got a little edge to her as well, right? She moved to Boston when she was 16. I don't know if we can claim her as a Massachusetts natives, as you know, like first, you know, Massachusetts fighter, right? Like when we talk about Ken Flo being the best fighter out of Massachusetts, we're not gonna like put Kayla in that class, are we, Ken Flo?
That's a good thing because she would be the better fighter out of Massachusetts. You know, listen, I think that she went out there and did Kayla Harrison things. I mean, that's what she does best. She gets a hold of you. She throws you on the ground with something spectacular, and then she beats you up. And we have to remind people that how many people go out and fight Holly Holm and actually look good? Not a whole lot of people. Holly has a knack for making you look bad, even in wins. Even if you beat her, it's not one of these things where you can dominate someone like Holly Holm. Rarely does that happen. And with all that experience, with all that athleticism and size and striking ability, you know, she's going to be a tough matchup for anybody. And this was pretty flawless from Kayla Harrison. Aside from that takedown where Holly was able to get on top, Holly still didn't take advantage of that position. It was Kayla, kept her composure, got right back to her feet, went right back to work, got the takedown, took over. Nasty, nasty grounded pound. I mean, she was strong all the way at 155 pounds, 145 pounds. Yeah. I can't even imagine what it's like to lock up with Kayla Harrison at 135 pounds. The fact that she was able to do that, she was on point from the get-go. I was seeing her so slowly lose that weight, cut down. Everything's perfect. The UFC really has a star in Kayla Harrison. Like, you just saw it coming. When I was hearing that she was maybe going to go over to the UFC, I was like, this is probably one of the best things they could do for women's MMA. She is going to be huge. She's going to be massive. People still don't know the full story behind her and what she's accomplished. As that story comes out more and more, I think she's going to resonate that much more with the fans. But she's got the skills to back it up. She's got the pedigree. She's got the story. And she showed the whole world that she has the skills to back it up as well. Not a whole lot of people can go out there and make Holly Holm look like that.
Yeah. And the unknown, John, was can she make the 35? She's jacked, that girl. So she made the weight. I was on the bus with her, I think, before, whatever. She never wavered in her personality. You know, some people don't want to look at you, don't want to talk to you. She was upbeat every aspect of that whole thing. So again, hats off to her team. She's got a great corner, Steve Marco, Anderson, Mike Brown's obviously great. Her strength and conditioning coach, I can't think of his name, but I know he consulted my great friend Tony Ricci, was a part of that and helping her make the weight. And Tony had nothing but beautiful things to say about her. So she's surrounded by the right people. She's in the right spot. Like you say, she's got the backstory. She lives it. She speaks it. And she's, you know, you just, when you talk to her, you know, there's something special about this girl. There really is. She's just like a beautiful soul. That's what I see. I don't think I'm mistaken. Like, I don't think she's pulling the wool over anybody's eyes. She's a really sweetheart, this girl. And I just wish her nothing but the best.
She was on my flight back to Miami. Took up lot of that overhead space, did Kayla Harrison, I'll tell you that. All right, so I thought on this night it was a particularly outstanding night for my broadcast partners, Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier. And if you could only see Joe walk into the dressing room, just jumping out of his skin with enthusiasm and excitement. And we were talking about the depth of the card, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but we mentioned Diego Lopez versus Sadiq Youssef, and Joe said he thinks Diego Lopez is going to be a world champion. And then Diego Lopez promptly goes out there, Ken Flo, in a minute and 29 seconds, and disposes of Super Sadiq Youssef in a way we have never seen before. Like, I'm not sure where the credit's supposed to be dispersed in terms of like a fucking pie chart, right? But like Francisco Grasso, man, like what this dude is developing is unbelievable. Ken Flo, Diego Lopez, man, like this is a BJJ coach, just a five-tool player. I wouldn't be surprised if this guy's in a championship setting in a win or two, man. What a rise to stardom, man. It's crazy.
Well, this was one of those fights, right? Like every fight, you're trying to prove something. But this was one of those fights for me where I go, okay, we're going to find out if he's going to be a title contender. If he's able to beat Youssef, just to get a decision win would be impressive. Like, hey, he's here. People need to watch out. You know, not only did we get that answer, but I think we got the answer that he's now calm inside the octagon. He knows how to manage the energy of a fight as opposed to, say, Bo Nickel. He went out there, was able to take a lot of what Youssef does well away from him. He got into that boxing range. He showed that he could throw the shorter, harder punches in tight. And he never let Youssef get started. That's what you do against a guy who comes with a very methodical game and likes to plan and strategize from the outside and take his time. Lopez never let him even get into that role. It was really cool to watch. And for me, you know, this was one of the ones that I got wrong. I'm not surprised by the result, but the way that he did it and as quickly as he did it was surprising. Lopez is the real deal. This is a guy that is a future title contender. No question about that.
And I tell you, Lopez has the X factor.
Yeah.
And you know what that factor is?
What's that?
His fucking haircut. Because I guarantee you cut that fucking hair off, this guy can't win a fight. This is Samson with that haircut.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll tell you, that haircut is what does it. But no, what a great kid, surrounded by great people. We saw him at when we were all taking the photos at the end. Great kid. Again, Francisco Grasso, absolutely great job of what he's doing over there.
Yeah.
All sweetheart people. And that kid's coming to fight, man.
Oh, I like, my gosh.
Even his call out of the other guy. Who the hell wants to fight that guy now? It's never like an exciting fight.
Kenny, don't that's give a nuts. Shit.
That's right? nuts, too. He's a good
– calling out – Movsar Eovloev, he almost finished him four times in their fight that he took on 5 days' notice. But, dude, you're right, Ray. Like, calling for him again, like, you know?
And as far as the Bo Nickel comparison, you know, Diego's got five times the amount of fights.
Exactly. Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, he should be able to manage the crowd and the energy at this point. Bo Nickel, that's, again, what I love about what he was saying. Give me some time. I mean, Jesus, I just got here. What are you busting my balls for?
The Diego Lopez story's crazy, right? He competed on the Contender Series, I believe, lost, and then went and lost his next fight. And then, obviously, it was hard for him to find fights at times, but... Man, like he went into this weekend not even ranked, so he's going to be ranked right now. You better hope he doesn't come for your guy, Aljamain Sterling, you know? but no, Lopez is going to be a star. I'd like to see him get a fucking main event. I know he only made his UFC debut like a year ago, but he's a bona fide featherweight contender. Selfishly, I just want him to have a main event because I know it's going to end in round one instead of, you know, round five at the end of the night. A little extra recreational time with the Ray Longos of the world, you know?
Wow. All right. I like where your head's at.
All right,
let's touch on Dilemme for a minute before I forget.
Please.
Anthony Dilemme, 6-0, great victory at the CFFC. Look for this kid on the Contender Series this summer. He's a really nice kid, great family. Let's fucking do it. But hats off to Dilemme. We all watched the fight during Aljo's ceremonial dinner the night before the fight, and everybody was ecstatic. So good energy.
That's awesome.
And Ray Longo just... managing obligations as usual, right? Team dinner.
Unbelievable.
But wasn't the fight in Vegas or no?
No, that fight was in the Hard Rock at in
Atlantic
Jersey.
City. All right.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, you know, have a great day and a better evening. We appreciate your extended time. We will start a GoFundMe for your pay-per-views.
You want me to put the Rolex up there again? Is that what you want?
I do. Can you do that,
the fucking Rolly up there?
Can I see
listen,
Rolex?
It was great to finally get to see you guys out in Vegas. I'm glad we all got together. Even though it was only short, Kenny, always great to catch up with you. And
absolutely,
again, I was glad to see lines of people wanting to take pictures with you guys.
Yeah.
You guys give back. I mean, that's what it's all about. Now, what do we have this platform for? To be selfish? Huh? Hey, you want to be a selfish motherfucker?
No. A little bit.
Huh?
We give back a little bit.
Yeah,
that's the goal, buddy. And we actually were contemplating on Sunday trying to figure out a way to sort of fight through the fatigue and get something out there, because I know people were looking for some content on the day after UFC 300. But we're here live on a Monday. We're going to let you go. So, you know, go sweat it out, and we will talk to you in about a week. But congratulations to you and Aljamain Sterling. I'm just having a little bit of fun at your guys' expense. You know, rumblings in Massachusetts that cater through the fight. But, you know, you guys can celebrate.
Hey, listen. Thank you, guys. Thanks for everything. It was a great weekend. Shout out to all the Minutemen. I mean, the love I got in Vegas this time, I haven't experienced in a long time. So I think the crowd, the fans, everybody was on point. It just... you know, worlds collided, whatever that saying is, where everything meets at the right point. I think it was just a phenomenal weekend. And you guys are the best. Thanks. I'm out of here.
There he is. You're the man. We love you.
Energy.
Great to see you.
Yeah,
awesome to see these old guys like Ken Flo and Ray Longo reconnect. You know, I'm just kidding. I'm Ken Flo's age. But
yourself,
he just loves seeing you. And, you guys just obviously go way back, and it's always cool when we can get everybody together. So thanks to the Virgin Hotel. Thanks to Big Ron Pellegrino. Great to have our producer Cody Merrow out there. Jason Anik, the president of the Diego Lopez fan club. This Diego Lopez is insane, right? And an even better human being, like Francisco Grasso, Alexa Grasso, Diego Lopez, Alessandro Costa. These are elite human beings, and to see them realize the success is what life is all about. You know what else life is about? A wager every now and again. It's actually finally time for the real season, so don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, unofficial sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. How about this Western Conference? Absolutely insane. Clippers and Mavericks in the first round. Pick a -110 on both sides for that series price. Suns -115 against the Minnesota Timberwolves, who come back -105. I actually have action on both of those as well as individual games, but not going to tell you what it is right now. Let's go. UFC has the week off. Get on in there. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Not now, but right now. Use code AFPOD. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code AFPOD only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, so real quickly, Kenny, I'm going to try to be efficient on some of these final fights at UFC 300, and then time permitting, we'll get some thoughts from you on Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler, and potentially even Islam Makhachev against Dustin Poirier, both of which were announced over the weekend. Also, Sean Strickland, Paulo Costa. So, Aljamain Sterling, we talked about his performance. I just wanted to get your quick thoughts on Calvin Kattar, because I don't know that there's much fight left in this dog. I mean, he has, you know, been through it to get to it. He has often talked about the journey being the destination. He has realized a lot of success as a promoter. This was a challenging matchup, but, you know, he was completely neutralized. And not to suggest that that wasn't all Aljo's doing, but I don't know. I kind of felt bad for Cal on this night, a huge showcase for the sport. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, Tyson Chartier, our friend, couldn't get him going. You're on mute. Love you, though.
Gosh. Yeah, it seemed like, you know, there was an issue with his ability to get his striking going. And I think it was kind of twofold. It was the unorthodox approach from Aljamain Sterling. And also, I think it was the threat of the takedowns. It seemed to freeze up his striking. And I don't know, in some of those exchanges, like when he was up against the cage, you like to see a certain level of composure, but you also want to see a certain level of competitiveness. And I'm not sure there was that sense of urgency out of Kattar that you'd see in other fights. Like, and perhaps that was maybe his lack of willingness to fight. I'm not sure I want to go that far. I don't know him well enough, but seemed like in other fights he's had that energy, and it just wasn't there against Aljo. Now, certainly Aljo's doing a great job of controlling him, especially up against the cage, on the floor, all that stuff. But I don't know. It definitely lacked a sense of urgency, I think, that you normally see from Calvin Kattar.
Renato Moicano over Jalen Turner by TKO. The end comes at 4:11 of round two. Not sure if Jalen Turner was chasing a potential $300,000 bonus, which he might have had a better chance to attain with a walk-off style KO. But the next thing you know, he was on the wrong side of it. And Moicano's the guy who deserves a lot of credit, Kenny. I love watching him grapple and get the fight where he wants to get it. And obviously, he was able to take Jalen Turner out from there. What do you make of Moicano rallying, you know, for a victory here in a huge spot at lightweight?
Yeah, now, Turner's inexperience is maybe his mental competitive awareness may have lost him this fight. He had Moicano hurt at a certain point. And, you know, you were talking about me following up, you know, maybe if the person's hurt. I don't do that necessarily to be mean, but I do it to make sure I get the result that I want. If you hesitate during a fight, then, man, you could be in trouble. That 1 second window, which may even be smaller in mixed martial arts, can be taken away from you if you're not applying the pressure on these, on the toughest individuals in the world. You have to, if you see a spot, you got to take them out. And Jalen Turner allowed Moicano back into this fight because maybe he felt that the referee should step in there. You're not a referee. You're a fighter. You fight. You don't let the referee go in there and try to dictate what happens. You have to follow up and try to take that guy out. And when someone is very tough like Moicano and dangerous and knows how to time his takedowns, he was able to battle back. He put Turner on his back. He cooked him in round one. And in the second round, was able to really take advantage. Turner was pretty much exhausted, didn't know what to do, was overwhelmed. He found that opportunity to take him out with ground and pound, and he did just that. Jalen Turner has a lot of talent, but you have to be better with the decisions that you make in the UFC. Those things matter. Yeah.
And on a night on which both Jiří Procházka and Max Holloway asked for an appearance on the Joe Rogan Experience, I thought it was great to see Renato Moicano say that Joe Rogan was going to be his podcast guest today. So hopefully yes. That comes to fruition. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Moicano, because there's just an undeniable electricity about him. I'm not sure I've ever enjoyed seeing a Brazilian speak English and work a microphone than this guy, Kenny. He really, I don't know, he has multiple lines every post-fight interview that really resonate.
I can tell you he's extremely popular with the Bitcoin community right now. I'll tell you that, you know, mentioning Austrian economics and Mises and all these things and property rights. I mean, so, you know, just that whole community, they have a favorite fighter in Moicano, and there's a lot of Bitcoiners out there. They were just, they couldn't believe what they were hearing in the post-fight interview. But, you know, when you have a guy who has really changed the way he approaches the fight, you heard him that I cannot afford to lose. It means that I'm going to fight really smart now. I'm going to be exciting when I can, but I'm going to fight smart, get the wins that I need so I can elevate my career and maybe fight for the title at one point. But more than anything else, he's trying to make as much money as possible. That nickname is there for a reason. He's doing all the right things, and he beat a really tough and talented guy in Jalen Turner.
What did you make of Bobby Green against Jim Miller? Jim Miller suggested that maybe Bobby Green has a style that doesn't age well. I don't know that Bobby Green has lost much of a step at all. And when you look at some of the challenges, Kenny, that he has taken on over the last several years, whether it's Islam Akhachev on short notice or Grant Dawson when he was undefeated in a main event, just wicked impressed with the career evolution for Bobby Green, the sustainability, right? And now realizing financial success at this stage of his career and, you know, taking care of business like that and battering Jim Miller 30-25 on one of the cards, like, it's a huge fucking win for the King.
Well, I think he has a lot of gratitude, you know, for where he's at this point in his career. The fact that he is able to make a lot of money now fighting in the UFC, being on these huge cards. And, you know, he's kind of fighting without this pressure. He's just kind of enjoying himself. He's enjoying the fights. He's enjoying the fact that he gets to entertain people with what he does best. And I thought this was an excellent performance from him. You know, he had Jim Miller hurt many times during that fight. I think it's almost seemed like Jim Miller kind of ran out of his bag of tricks after round one, and Bobby Green understood what the assignment was after that and then really kind of unleashed hell on Jim Miller. The body kicks down the middle, the proper range. It never allowed Jim Miller to really do what he does best, which is get to the clinch and hit those takedowns. Bobby Green was keeping him on the outside, was able to see the takedowns coming, was able to stop the takedowns and beat up and battered Jim Miller. You know, something impressive.
All right. So last fight I want to touch on, and then I just want to talk some big picture UFC 300 stuff. We'll get to Conor and Chandler, and then we'll let you get back to childcare or whatever it is you do with the rest of your day. So Davison Figueiredo beats Cody Garbrandt by rear naked choke. I guess I'm just curious, like, where you see Davison in this 135 pound division in which they're all chasing Sean O'Malley, because that sounds like a fun competitive fight, even though Davison's got to need a couple more wins. Like, what are your thoughts on Figueiredo as a potential future two division champion, having twice already won the flyweight belt and now ascending at 35, Rob Font, and now Cody Garbrandt in the rearview mirror?
Well, I think his position is secure as someone you want to watch because of the skills that he brings in, because of the pedigree, what he's accomplished in the division, and the fact that he's exciting to watch. You know, he's showing that he has multiple ways to win. He can switch things up. He can use strategy to win fights. And I think that was the difference here. The timing of his takedowns, taking advantage of the opportunity on the ground against Cody Garbrandt. And Cody was looking pretty good early on, but I think the takedowns and specifically the threat of the takedowns, similar to maybe the Turner fight or the Cater fight, it tends to shut down your striking. If you don't have a lot of confidence with your takedown defense, it can shut down your striking. It can take you off rhythm. And I think that's what Davison started to do to Cody Garbrandt. And we know about maybe some of the mental hiccups that Cody Garbrandt can encounter during fights. You know, sometimes he loses some of that emotional stability during fights and makes some poor decisions. And, you know, Davison had great timing on that entry, was able to take the back of Cody Garbrandt and ended up getting it done. And, you know, Cody's vulnerability has been if he does end up in bad positions on the ground on his back, that's going to, you know, be an effect on any fighter. It's going to be tough for any fighter to deal with. But when you have someone as sharp and as experienced as Davison Figueiredo, who's been there with tough guys and 5-round fights, and the fact that he is very durable and pretty emotionally stable in the fights, I think that was the difference. And that was a big, big win for him. And I expect him to do big things. Wouldn't be surprised to see him fight for the belt at some point. But there is a big line leading to that belt at 135 pounds right now, dude.
All right. A few quick questions on UFC 300 on the way out. Fact or fiction, Zhang Weili's next title defense will come against Tatiana Suarez, who has competed at flyweight, but is now, of course, back to 115 pounds. What do we think?
I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
All right. So, Bo Nickel, Khamzat Chimaev. Right now, do you favor Khamzat Chimaev in a matchup with Bo Nickel, given the MMA experience? Dream matchup for a lot of fight fans, Bo Nickel, Khamzat Chimaev. But sitting here April 15, 2024, who do you like?
I like the matchup for Bo Nickel based on skills, but right now, because of experience, yeah, I'd be leaning towards Khamzat right now.
In terms of ranking Max Holloway's knockout all time, our good friend Joaquin Buckley, new Mansa against Impa Kasanganai. Aesthetically, I'm not sure you have a neater knockout. For me, I would put Edson Barboza against Terry Etim, actually aesthetically, a notch above that. I thought there was like some attack happening on that arena in Rio de Janeiro. But I do think this greatest knockout of all time conversation, Kenny, oftentimes focuses on fights in which there are championship stakes. So I'm going to give you three and you tell me which one does it for you. Leon Edwards against Kamaru Usman. I'll give you four. Leon Edwards against Kamaru Usman. Conor McGregor against Jose Aldo. Gosh, I could really open this thing up. No, I'll go Leon Edwards against Kamaru Usman, Conor McGregor against Jose Aldo, Anderson Silva against Vitor Belfort, Max Holloway against Justin Holloway against
Man, out of all of those, I would probably be leaning towards the Conor McGregor knockout of Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo at the time was, you know, easily recognized as the number one pound for pound fighter on the planet. Conor knocked him out in about 13 seconds. Everyone's jaw dropped, the stakes, everything Conor was saying to build up that fight, and the fact that he was able to go out there and actually get it done in that fashion was something absolutely spectacular. John is just going back to his backup to get sound, but that was one of those moments I think a lot of people are never going to forget. However, the way it went down with Max Holloway really just putting on a clinic against Justin Gaethje and then ultimately getting that knockout by pointing at the canvas and trading with one of the most dangerous guys in that division and putting him out face first into the canvas, that is without a doubt top three, top five knockouts in UFC history. Just unreal.
All right, so we're live right now. My studio just went down. We got the backup set up rolling. Can you hear me, Ken Flo?
Yes, sir.
I mean, this is what we do. So today's show has been so enjoyable that I'm inclined to go live every Monday and Wednesday, which I think would be very exciting for our listenership to not have to wait for the show later in the day. But, you know, sometimes when you got a brand new studio, you want to use it, but the fancy studio failed me, so we have the backup set up ready to go here live. All right, so Last one from me before we get to Connor and Chandler. In terms of you ranking UFC 300 all time, you were with me there on the ESPN set for MMA Live at UFC 100. You have called a lot of big events dating to UFC 83. For me, I'm not sure that any event singularly would top UFC 229, but UFC 300 is close. We were talking off the air. Islam Akhachev and Alexander Volkanovski in Perth, Western Australia felt absolutely enormous, but and I have actually a visual here, UFC 217, right, in New York City, the night upon which three belts changed hands, George St. Pierre against Michael Bisping, Rose Namajunas against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, TJ Dillashaw against Cody Garbrandt. Some people might say UFC 205. For me, it's either UFC 300 or UFC 229. Where does this one rank all time for you?
Yeah, I would say overall, top to bottom, first fight to the last fight, I would say probably the best of all time. But is it the best main card? Probably not. It's up there. But as far as, you know, it being the best main card, probably not. 229 is one of those that really stand out to me. But yeah, I think that overall, it really did deliver, man. There was a lot of hype behind this. Every single fighter fought their ass off. And it was an amazing bet.
All right, Anakin Florian podcast poll question. Now that we know the weight class, 170 pounds, and we know the date for Michael Chandler versus Conor McGregor, June 29th, UFC 303, who wins the fight? Conor McGregor's the betting favorite right now, Kenny, albeit slightly minus 120. Michael Chandler, the even money underdog, plus 100. 57% of respondents like the slight underdog, Michael Chandler. I know you were not expecting to be making a prediction on this fight today. But I don't much care. Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler, June 29th. Who do you like?
I think Conor is the better fighter. I think he's got more skills. I think he has more ways to win than Michael Chandler does. However, you know, Conor McGregor has so much going on. How much energy has he put into training for this? I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, what am I going off of social media and all this stuff? Like it's hard to really know. But right now I'd maybe be leaning towards Chandler, but I want to see more. I want to see footage. I want to see, that Conor is focused training. I want to see him saying the right things. You know what Chandler's going to show up, you know? And sometimes he brings too much chaos and recklessness into the octagon. But you know, he's going to train hard and be ready. So, with Conor, I'm not so sure, but skill wise, man, he is so talented. But I'm excited for that fight, man. That's going to be pretty special as well.
And then Islam Akhachev in defense of his title against Dustin Poirier at UFC 302. I think an interesting time for Poirier with confidence riding so very high to be getting this Islam Akhachev fight. The Gaethje result, of course, was good for Poirier's case. What do you make of Dustin's chances here against the thus far nearly perfect Islam Akhachev?
It's going to be extremely difficult for him to beat Akhachev. You know, again, just based on his last fight against another grappler, no question for me that he'll be the more dangerous guy in the feat. You know, if someone gets the knockout, perhaps it's Dustin Poirier against Islam Akhachev, and Islam has definitely been improving his striking skills. I like it there, but Islam is going to have the ability to take this fight where he wants. Where does he want it? On the ground. That's where he's going to take advantage and be able to move and out-position Poirier, perhaps for an eventual TKO or submission. So I like Mahashev's chances as of right now.
All right, thank you all for indulging us for this extended live UFC 300 recap. I did just want to say in closing at this live event, we acknowledge Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva. Their fight from 2010 for the middleweight title will be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame as part of our induction class of 2024. So Silva versus Sonnen won going into the UFC Hall of Fame. And I just want to say, as somebody who has hosted this UFC Hall of Fame induction ceremony for a long time, we use these wings as conduits to get certain people into the Hall of Fame. Not to suggest that our Hall of Fame is perfect, right? But Chael Sonnen has been a major contributor to mixed martial arts, and I'm really happy for him to get this type of acknowledgement. He has brought a ton to the sport. He nearly realized the world championship at middleweight that he so badly wanted to produce for his late father. He was unable to do that, but he's continued to deliver, you know, as my colleague on the TV side. And I just think he's brought a lot of eyeballs to mixed martial arts. So, you know, even though he was absolutely filthy, maybe the night upon which he fought my good friend Brian Stann, you know, I hope Chael will understand that, you know, this fight wing is used as a conduit to get deserving people into the Hall of Fame. And I hope that Chael Sonnen will, in that, consider himself a UFC Hall of Famer. All right, we got to get on out of here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. JohnAnik.com for all of your merchandise needs. Promo code One More Sleep gets you 20% off of all the UFC 300 designs for One More Sleep, as well as all the Anik and Florian podcast merchandise as well. And don't forget KennyFlorianMartialArts.com if you want to become a badass like Max Holloway. Thank you to Ray Longo. Thanks to our producer, Cody Merrow, at the helm. And thanks to the entire Anik and Florian podcast family showing up, showing out in Las Vegas. Thanks to our sponsor, of course, Cuervo. Thanks to the DraftKings folks as well. And we will be back either later this week or early next as we get ready for the next UFC fight night coming up on April 27th. With that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for watching, for listening. Until next week, don't text and drive. Yo, fucking later. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.